You're listening to On Air with JT.
This is On Air with JT. Join JT, visionary and host, for a 420 friendly improv and variety talk show featuring pop culture, news, interviews, debates, and the home of the famous JT Rants. Here, mental health awareness is at the forefront, with JT on a mission to inspire and spread mental health awareness. Available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and YouTube. You can stay up to date and get in touch by heading to onairwithjt.com. To contact the show directly or for business inquiries, use onairwithjt@gmail.com.
JT here. I have to introduce you to Pure Hemp Rolling Papers. Eco-friendly, tree-free, and chemical-free. Born in 1996 in Spain, with nearly 300 years of paper crafting experience, explore their variety of rolls and cones, including their innovative Pure Hemp Earth Papers. For quality and innovation in rolling, choose Pure Hemp. That's what I smoke. Visit their Instagram for more information and elevate your rolling game with Pure Hemp. That's PureHemp. Tell them JT sent you.
JT did it again.
How's it going, everybody? You are listening or watching a brand new episode / interview with On Air with JT. And like always, my name is Justin Thomas, but you can call me JT. And we have a very exclusive, special interview today. We have on the phone Jason Knott, lead singer of the Beachwood Coyotes. How are you doing today, Jason?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, man. And like we were talking about before we went live, yeah, I came across Cuffing Season on the placement on Shameless. And just within like the first, I'm not even bullshitting you, man. Within the first, just because I'm such a music nerd, within the first, just once I heard that, you know, the melody at the beginning and the riff, I was like, all right, this is a fucking hit. And I immediately, I didn't even download it. I went and bought it because I love supporting artists and things like that. And I
thank mean, you.
Of course. I mean, even though the difference between buying a, you know, a single or streaming, I mean, it's a little bit better, but still, there's definitely a big problem with artists not receiving the right amount of money compared to the streams that are getting played and what these corporations are making. But that's, you know, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, like that's something that it's tough because I wouldn't say go back and forth with that, but it is so much easier to access music now, and there's a lot more of it, and so in some ways it's great because it gets your music out to more people and stuff, and it's easier to access more people. But I think we are making a lot less money than we would, you know, maybe 20 years ago or something. And when streaming was really radio, and that was, exactly, you know, and all that stuff. And so that's why artists are branching out and doing, it used to be used to be called a sellout if you had a song in a show or a commercial or something like that. And now it's like the only way to make a living, you know.
Times have changed, right?
Yeah. Unless you're touring like crazy. I'm 33.
Okay, so I'm 29. So, like, you know, we used to go to, I'm sure you went to CD stores and record stores and, you know.
Of course.
Like, that's just how we grew up. And, you know, looking back, it's just so funny. You know, I remember buying CDs when I was a kid, you know, $29.99 and all these things. And then, you know, it wasn't a great, you know, album. You know, you spent $30 just to listen to two or three good songs. But, you know, obviously that was, you know, really good for the artist on terms of like the business aspect. But unfortunately, just with the streaming and everything like that, that just makes, unfortunately, artists have to, you know, do more touring. They have to do merch. And I'm sure that there's a constant battle, especially with artists and bands and musicians. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, that are very talented and successful, but obviously, as we know, there's levels to these industries and, you know, levels on success, quote unquote. And I'm sure you've had to battle with, you know, what do I do so I don't get this kind of feedback from the people that support me and think I'm like a, like selling out or doing things like that. Or, you know, even when you're trying to be in the creative process of trying to experiment with new sounds and new lyrics and things like that, I'm sure that's something that's always, you know, comes across, you know, your brain and you think about.
Yeah, I get a little embarrassed sometimes with the how much I talk about in my lyrics, and I often won't even like talk to my band about what the subject matter is because I'm so close to them, you know. Uh-huh. And it's a weird thing, but I also noticed that too when you actually do write stuff that's deep like that and stuff that is kind of embarrassing to yourself, it's better received, I think.
Definitely. Would you say kind of that might correlate to like maybe even the first verse of Cuffing Season?
Yeah. That's about a girl who, you know, broke my heart. We're back together now.
Congratulations.
Years later that I wrote that song years before we got back together.
But okay.
This girl and I, she broke my heart, and it was all about kind of, we had started kind of seeing each other again years after dating. We dated when we were like 23, so 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I sometime in 2018 or so, I can't remember when I wrote that song, so around then, I think her and I had kind of reconnected, and but she didn't really want to settle down or date me. And so I don't know, are you familiar with the term cuffing season, or do you know what that means? Or
yeah, I do. Yeah.
Okay.
I was born in February, so that also
yeah. Yeah, sure. I just, you know, I wrote it about that, about it's kind of this like unrequited love. Yeah. You know, and I think people resonated with that emotion, and
it's that vulnerability.
Totally. Yeah. That's the word I was looking
for. And that's what got me. That's what got me, especially, you know, talking about the mental health and things like mm-hmm. that. I mean, that resonated with me. And, you know, I did a little bit of research, and, you know, I don't know how much you want to talk about this, but and correct me if I'm wrong, but you have dealt with some mental health issues and family mm-hmm. members and things like that. And how much has that impacted on when you're in that creative space of writing music? How much of an impact does that have on you? And I know that might kind of be like a stupid question, but especially
it's not a stupid question.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off,
no,
but,
you're fine.
But no, it's, yeah, no, I lost my mom almost a year ago.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, no, thank you for saying that. It's funny. We're doing her memorial tomorrow. We're doing it a year later. We never did a funeral or anything.
Oh, wow.
So we're literally, but it's good. It's a good thing that I'm able to see family and all this stuff, and that's nice, and to reconnect with those people. But in terms of how things like that have shifted my life, and it's a massive shift, because I find myself writing a lot more like words, not as much music. Mm-hmm. I'm writing, but it's not like poetry. I'm not writing a short story. It's just, I write down things that come to mind, and eventually, I've always looked at songwriting as kind of like a puzzle that you're building mm. yourself, you know? Mm. And so I'll write lyrics, and I was writing a ton, maybe, you know, within a month or two after she passed. And I had a lot to say, mm-hmm. but I haven't, but my, like, my ambition was kind of stifled though from losing her. So I know though, down the road, I'm kind of coming out of this haze a little bit. I've really been in a weird place for the last year. There's so many layers to all of that,
of course.
That I went through. And I have all this responsibility on my shoulders after she passed. There's a lot of just moving parts and loose ends I had to tie up and things like that. And so, I'm now at this point where I'm able to kind of write music again too, and kind of getting back in the swing of things. Mm-hmm. It took me a while though. You always hear stories about people that go through really harsh times, and they're inspired by it, and they come out writing some of the best stuff ever. But
exactly.
I feel like I'm on the cusp of being able to do that. It's just been really tough for me to sit down and focus fully for a long time. But with that being said, I still am like constantly playing music and you know, making sure I'm flexing those muscles, because I think you need to. It is kind of like working out a little bit. You need to be kind of
you need those reps.
Yeah, you need those reps. Trying to think of like good ways to like you know, say this, but yeah, that's all I'd say about that. It's weird. It's a really odd thing. I've had times where I've gone through tragedies in my life and all I wanted to do was just write and whatever. And so, yeah, it goes in phases, but yeah. It's something, it's good for me to talk about it. It's therapeutic for me to talk about that stuff. I never, you know, I don't like to stray away from those things. I like to talk about the harsh things.
Yeah. And I really applaud you, because it's not an easy thing to do. You know, most people that aren't even artists are unable to express their emotions and things like that. And even when you are an artist or musician, singer, et cetera, or, you know, create any type of work or art, you know, you have to be in that state of vulnerability. And obviously there's certain levels of that, but when you are in that kind of space, that's usually when most people will kind of be drawn to you, you know, because it kind of creates this magnet. Because there's so many people and so many people all over the world of different races and cultures, they can relate to that, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's the beauty of music.
Yeah. There's something about music where, you know, people will be replaying songs 20, 30, 40, 50 years later. Mm-hmm. There's something very timeless about certain pieces of music. Not all music is timeless, obviously. I think there's certain music in our current generation that hopefully will be gone in 6 months, but
yeah,
right. If not sooner. You know, yeah, if not soon, exactly. I mean, the attention spans we have too aren't helping either.
No,
you know,
not at all. So Jason, when did you, so you're 33 now, when did you start making music?
I started playing guitar when I was 9 or 10.
Oh wow!
And then I started like a little garage band with my buddy Marty, and he was playing drums and I was playing guitar. And then eventually I got to high school and graduated to singing and started a little band in my hometown. And then when I was 16, I started touring with this band I joined called Drive A, and we put out a couple records and toured like crazy. We opened for a lot of big bands and
did you get a record deal out of that?
Yeah, we were like we put out stuff for 5 or 6 years. We had the whole, like, everything you can think of we did. It was crazy.
Wow.
We had the bus life, you know, touring all that stuff. Yeah. And so cool. Yeah, I mean, I've been doing it for a long time. I was very, very young when I got started. Mm. It was luck, though. I mean, we were a great band, and I'm not going to, you know, deny that. Like, I know we were absolutely a great band, but it was nothing but luck. I mean, I was 16 years old when that started happening. Our singer was 14.
Wow.
It was the craziest thing. Yeah.
And when that happened, and obviously that, you know, you had these goals and dreams, and I'm sure you believed in yourself, and obviously I can't speak for yourself, but as, you know, a creator and artist myself, a lot of artists are our own biggest critics. But did you expect, you know, everything just to like explode out of nowhere?
No.
Was it different from everything that you were seeing and getting than you visualized or had this perception of prior to getting that success?
It's weird because I always, like, wanted to play music and be on stage and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But I was like catapulted so quickly into playing really big shows. Like, I think the first show we played was this LA venue called Avalon. We're opening for Lily Allen, who was kind of blowing up at the time. She was coming up. And then Camp Freddy, who's this super group that features like Dave Navarro and Stephen Perkins, all these kind of like rock and roll people that are like the guys from James Addictions, all that stuff, you know? Mm. And then they would have this revolving lineup of like famous singers who'd come out, and like, this is like my first show ever. I'm playing like in Los Angeles, and
wow.
Wow. There's like a couple thousand people there. And I'm meeting, like, I think I met like Ozzy Osbourne that night or something. Like all these crazy people. Yeah, it was like so insane. It was just like overnight I'm going from like playing my hometown bar with my high school band to I'm playing with actual rock stars who are legends. And it was the craziest thing ever. So at the time, I never expected that would happen so quickly. But I was 16. I got used to it because I really appreciated it the entire time. I'm so grateful for that time.
Of course.
But it just became a normal thing.
You get accustomed to it.
I'm flying to Dallas next week to do this radio show, or I'm doing, you know,
yeah,
playing in New York City at Roseland Ballroom, you know, in front of a few other people like this. Yeah.
And was there a moment, I'm sure there was plenty of moments, but I always like to ask musicians this. Was there a pinnacle moment when you realized, like, oh shit, this is really happening? Like, oh shit, like this is bigger than I thought. Like,
yeah, I mean, we never, I would never say we got famous, but we had a crazy rabid fan base that mm-hmm. Some people I still know to this day and that are friends of mine now. And I made a lot of friends from that time. But I think a moment that I realized, oh, there's something happening here is when someone came up to us and they'd had our band name tattooed on them.
Oh, wow.
Then,
that's awesome.
And then they asked us to sign their back around, like she'd gotten it on her back. She asked us to sign our signatures. And so then she got our signatures tattooed.
That's awesome.
That was the craziest thing ever. So when people started showing up with tattoos and stuff and seeing all the lyrics and all that, like that was a mind blowing thing.
Yeah, that's pretty epic.
That was real. I mean, I'll never like take that for granted. That was the coolest thing ever, and having people really connect with our music like that. And
definitely, it must be such a beautiful feeling.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when did I already asked you that? So, what musicians, artists, producers, etc., kind of influenced you, whether it was at a young age or while you were in this transition of doing different projects with different people? Are there, you know, some really key influences that inspired you to really become a musician full-time professionally?
Hands down, Blink-182 was my biggest influence. Yeah. Hands down, biggest for me, because they were so accessible in terms of playing. You could pick up a guitar and learn their songs within a week, you know, like, and beginners can learn. And that's not anything against like their abilities or anything. They're great songwriters, and they wrote a lot of songs that really, you know, stuck with people in really deep ways. I mean, their new album I think just came out today.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was really easy for me to like be like, oh yeah, I can do this. It felt attainable music. So then Blink,
I don't mean to cut you off, Jason, but
no, sure.
Was it because they were kind of versatile and they just had this unique sound?
I think they found a way to make fast, fun music accessible to a larger audience. Mm-hmm. And Green Day had done that. Obviously they'd done that, you know, 5 or 6 years prior when Dookie came out. And
yeah, exactly.
That was a huge deal. And I grew up in all those 90s kind of pop punk bands. And, but it led me though to like, after you learn certain songs and you learn the, you know, 3-chord structure and all that stuff, like some people stick with that forever. And I said, I don't know, I want to branch out and learn more things and kind of graduate from this and get really good at my instruments and try new instruments and stuff. But I just think Blink was like the reason I was able to have faith in myself to do something. They just made it so accessible.
And it's so crazy just to see how they're still relevant. They're still putting out music. They're on touring. It just shows the longevity of when you are able to make good music. And then you have that community of a solid community of fan base and supporters and people like that. Again, you know, the power of music is really a big thing. I have to ask you, what is so far, what has been the most memorable gig or concert that you've played so far?
That's a good question. There
might be a couple. I know that's kind of a
hard thing. There's a couple. I mean, there's some that I've done with Beachwood and Beachwood's a band I started 10 years ago. Okay. There's some of Beachwood that have been really important to me. And like when we did our first tour, it was back in 2016, and we played this show in Austin at this random like wine bar. And I remember getting up on dancing on tables while during the show and like just getting really crazy with it. I think we'd had, you know, we were all drinking pretty heavily at the time, you know, and we're on tour and we're like really excited about that. And I remember that show being crazy fun just because we were fun. It was a band that I had started myself, and we were independent, had no, didn't even have a manager. We had nothing. We booked everything ourselves. And
that's a lot of work.
Yeah, no, it's a crazy amount of work. Actually, you get a lot of rejections. You get like, we're doing like a 10, 12 date tour, you know, and we're trying to fill spots and dates, and we're routing the tour ourselves. And you gotta email 20 or 30 venues in each city in order to get one response, even, you know.
It's exactly. Just like, yeah.
So much. But then, and then when I think about my time in Drive A, I really loved any time we went to the East Coast, anywhere in the East Coast, Boston, New York.
So you performed in Boston?
Yeah, House of Blues a ton of times.
Oh,
I think that's
nice.
The venue,
yeah.
I played up there. But
that,
I played there.
That's a great
times.
Venue.
Yeah. Yeah. I love playing, but there's something about the East Coast. People are just really stoked and hyped up. And LA, I love it. I love that I grew up in California. I'm very fortunate. Mm-hmm. But people are very jaded. And, you know, people just kind of cross their arms and like look at you when you play, even if you're in a successful band.
Yeah.
LA's not so fun to play. It's really not a great show, a great town to play. And it's a great town to like to, you know, flex your live playing skills and like get those reps in, as we said earlier, you know. But it's good because it shapes, you're around so many amazing musicians. Like everyone here is in a great band.
Exactly.
It's very rare that you see like a really bad garage sloppy band in LA. They're very tight, great musicians, but the crowds aren't great. And so in a way that's good, that you need to be humbled, right?
Mm-hmm.
We all need to be humbled at certain points. So
do you think that's because, I mean, just particularly LA and just with all successful musicians, well, not all, but the majority, and you have, you know, all these big, massive, commercially success bands and artists and singers performing all the time. So then when you have, you know, maybe some bands that just might be a little bit less known or underground or whatever it might be, the people, you know, the audience, some audience members and fans, it's just hard to kind of understand the contrast of, hey, like this is, you know, 30 Seconds to Mars, or, you know, this is Foo Fighters playing, you know, not, you know, some other band. And then they could kind of get this distorted kind of perception.
Oh, that's a good point. I think though people come out here. It's a huge transplant city, obviously. I mean, you're talking about moving out here, which is great. You absolutely should. But people come out here with this idea that they need to act cool or be a certain way. This is my observation of growing up here.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that a lot of the people that are kind of, they're too cool and whatever, they just like, they don't get so hyped on things. They don't get so, you know, it's, you have to go to Orange County or San Diego or other areas in California to really get like a good crowd reaction and have people really be genuinely happy to be there. People in LA are just like kind of, they just don't ever want to like get, put their guard down in a way.
Yeah.
And like let loose. It's a weird thing. It's a very weird thing. I'm not trying to bash my city, but it's anyone who plays music or performs in any way will agree with me and understand what I'm saying by that. It's a weird thing. But I also love it though, because I am surrounded by a lot of artists of many different types of people I never thought I would ever be surrounded by. I love the film industry. I love movies and TV shows. I'm fascinated by that. I'm glad the veil hasn't been lifted yet, so I still love it. I'm like a fan of that stuff. You know, and I like having friends that are writers and directors and work in the, and actors work in the, that industry, because it just inspires me to do better at what I do.
Exactly.
You know,
that's how I feel. I mean, not being in LA right this second, but just, you know, having that network and being surrounded by people, not only in just the particular industry that you're in, you know, mm-hmm. having that accessibility to other people in different industries is so vital.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's cool. Cause I like when my friends, succeed at what they're doing. And I really genuinely mean that too. It makes me happy. I like learning new things about, different types of art, and even if I won't pursue certain aspects of that one day, I like being adjacent to it. It inspires me to continue on.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's really cool. You said you're moving out to LA. You want to act, right?
Yeah. So I mean, there's multiple reasons why I want to move to LA. I mean, the main reason is just because I'll be able to audition so many more places, and there's more agencies and more opportunities and things like that. But people don't even know. I mean, there's a very huge percentage of all the movies and, you know, TV shows that we're watching today, or, you know, people that are watching, if they watch cable TV, is, you know, a lot of the scenes and everything is filmed in like Boston and Massachusetts, because it was kind of like how a lot of films were filmed in like Toronto and things like that in the 90s, early 2000s, because, you know, they get the tax breaks and, you know, all these things where it's cheaper to film and things like that. But it's kind of limited on what you can do and everything like that. And Boston's just a weird city. And I've been very open about this, talking to, whether it was Zach Barnett of American Authors, who, you know, went to school in Massachusetts and started, you know, that band. And it's just, I don't know. It's just, everyone seems, because there hasn't been a real successful, like, mega star that's come out of Boston or Massachusetts for so long. So everybody in the music scene, because I was a manager, I used to run like a little label and managed and was an agent for a couple of artists. And I've seen firsthand that just everybody's just trying to, you know, push everybody over, trying to get to the finish line, and nobody helps. And you see like different music scenes, like in Atlanta or New York or even LA or in California, you know, I see personally, I mean, obviously there's, you know, people that are just shitty, but there's a lot of people that will help out each other. And, you know, if you have a connection, they'll help you out, or, you know, they'll collab with you and things like that. And that's just something that doesn't happen in Boston.
Really? Yeah, I've never thought that.
It's very weird. It's a very weird, and I've always been trying to like analyze it and figure out why, but I guess it just comes down to jealousy and envy to a certain degree. But there's a lot of talent. I mean, there's a lot of talent in Boston. Obviously, you have, you know, Berklee School of Music and things like that.
Of course.
But speaking of collaborations, if you were to, are there any like artists or bands, musicians that you would like to collaborate with? If, like, you know, in a hypothetical, you know, future, is there any artists that you look up to, or maybe you just kind of came across or inspired you that you would love to one day work with?
You know, there's a few that come to mind. It's a tough one. My inspirations are so wide spreading, and like I got into Tyler the Creator back in 2013, right?
Yeah.
And he's someone who kind of changed my perception of music and of what you could do with hip hop and what you could speak about in hip hop. And and I was not even a hip hop fan at all at the time. And anyway, and then you dive into someone like him who produces everything and writes everything and plays most everything on his records. And he's this like really accomplished piano player and a composer too. It's like insane what his musical knowledge is.
Yeah. And super high IQ when it comes to
totally.
Music. Yeah.
Totally. Like, absolutely. And just with someone speaking about things that people weren't generally at the time, and something that like connected with me, he was attached to like skateboard culture and all that stuff in California. And it was just stuff that I kind of came up with. It was like if one of my, it's like if one of my favorite pop punk artists became a hip hop artist or something like that. He's had that personality too. Mm-hmm. You know, he's had this funny, fun, happy go lucky personality. So I don't think that would ever happen. We're so different and we're opposites completely in music. Mm-hmm. But he's someone I would love to work with. Like, but that's a crazy, that's like saying I want to work with Beyonce or something, you know?
I mean, anything can happen.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And like,
put it out into the universe, it'll come true.
Yeah. Yeah. You're absolutely right about that. Like I completely believe in manifesting that kind of stuff and speaking into existence. I think there's a lot of power to our words and what we think about and what we give power to, you know? Mm. Yeah. He's one I love very much. This is like a tough question. I'm trying to think, man, who else I would want to work with. There's a lot of great producers nowadays. I don't know. I'm just going to say him for now.
That's a good choice. Mm-hmm. And Jason, so I got to ask you, basically Beachwood Coyotes, you said had been around for 10 years now. So you guys were founded in 2013.
Yeah, 2013.
Okay.
Yeah.
So can you share any updates or anything? Are you guys in the studio working on any new music or any projects and things like that?
You know, what we're going to do is you and I were talking earlier about how we have, that we get some TV placements and stuff. And I do projects on the side too that have gotten placed as well. We're going to release... that we have like several songs that I would say like B-sides or whatever you want to call them, but some of them are songs that got placed on TV shows that we just never put out because I don't know, we didn't feel we could give enough attention to them at the time, and some of them are songs that we've just kind of sat on and didn't really think like, oh, this didn't make the record, you know, we just kind of didn't scrap it but just kind of put it to the side. So what we are I'm working on is compiling a group of songs that I want to make into an EP, and I thought of a funny little names, like I think it's like songs that are new to you but old to us or something like that. Maybe that's the title, you know.
That's good.
So I'm working on that right now. We were just chatting recently about playing, and realistically it's not going to happen until next year, I don't think, that we can get together and do stuff. We're all busy in our own creative endeavors. Like we all do music outside of the band. Mm-hmm. And then our drummer is he's a TV editor, so he works a lot on that stuff, and so we're always doing creative things outside of the band. Getting the four of us together is really tough sometimes, and so this last year has been probably the slowest, I would say, for Beachwood. But like I had this idea a few months ago to like put out this, you know, B-sides EP, because I was like, people are still listening to us. We get consistent messages and comments all the time, and people still care. And I'm like, I don't want to lose that momentum. And I also don't want people to think that we've just stopped or given up, because we haven't. We always have something kind of like ready to go. But I want to put out more music with Beachwood, and we're gonna do that. I'm hoping in the next 2 months we'll have some new stuff out.
Awesome. I can't wait to hear it.
We'll see. I mean, I'm also focusing on I'm in the process of putting together a solo record too. I put out a solo single like a month and a half ago, I think, something like that. And I'm doing just other stuff. It's something I'd never done before. I'd never put out music just on my own. So that's something I'm experimenting with too. And it's keeping my, creative juices flowing.
Definitely.
It's just keeping busy with that.
And if people want to check that out, will they just type in Jason Knott on?
Yeah, just Jason Knott, N-O-T-T. I always have to tell people that, okay. N-O-T-T.
N-O-T-T,
yeah.
Everybody.
It's my last name, yeah.
So Jason, what role does social media play in promoting your music? Because now we talked a little bit about that, but you know, everything, you know, there's so many songs and stupid songs that are blowing up on TikTok, or even just good songs, some good songs that are promoting on TikTok and getting, you know, all this success that's translating into Billboard charting and all these things. And so much of the key fundamentals of what the music industry, how we define the music industry, you know, 20 years ago is different from 10 years ago. And that's also different from 5 years ago. Like, it's such at a high, rapid pace of evolution. And I honestly, my personal opinion, don't think it's necessarily for the good. You know, I'm all for everybody to experiment, and if something you want to do, then do it. But I feel like it has kind of put a lot more pressure on artists, songwriters, producers, bands, etc., because they're seeing, regardless of how successful you are or not, but you're seeing, you know, these people that will make a song that's horrible, in my personal, you know, opinion, with my music taste. And then you see all these talented artists and bands that are in the studio working so hard, that aren't trying to make, you know, some stupid TikTok dance video. And that's not a knock on anybody, but that's just, you know, again, my personal opinion.
Sure.
What do you feel like do you feel any pressure about that? Just because it's just the evolution of how music is getting distributed and kind of getting that recognition. Cause now it's about going viral.
It's a tough thing, because I don't like it either. But it's not something we can stop, unfortunately. I've said this for years. Yeah, technology is moving so rapid. It's moving faster than our brains can even compute. You know, we as humans, like, are going to fall behind so quickly. You know, it's already a tough thing. And I think, to answer your question about stuff going viral on TikTok or whatever and all that, like, it's there are a lot more gimmicky songs now. There's a lot of like one-liner things and that you'll hear that just kind of sound catchy or whatever it is, and dumb little things getting, you know, really successful. But I'm not going to sit here and be mad about it. It's a different lane. You know, I'm a singer-songwriter guy in a rock band. I'm not necessarily going to be for that TikTok crowd, I don't think. You know, it's rare that I would be competing with that. It's a totally different lane, I think, that I'm in. And I look, I'm not, like I said, I'm not a fan of it either. I also don't, you know, think I don't need to put energy into, like, oh, this is horrible, and it's really easy to shake your cane. Say, oh, these damn kids, you know.
Exactly.
But it's just kind of silly to me. I don't take it so seriously, because a lot of this is going to pass in certain ways, and we're going to go through phases. People are going to be starved for, or people are already starved for, real emotion and things that feel genuine. So there are still artists that are out there that are putting time into records. Cause that's the one thing, is it used to be, oh yeah, you put out a record, you tour on it, and then you'd go away for a while. Mm-hmm. Right. And now people feel like they have to be constantly putting stuff out and constantly crazy. And so I go back and forth, because I sometimes feel like I don't put out enough, or I don't do enough. And sometimes I have to, like, take myself aside and say, no, you're taking your time on this because it's important to you. And it's okay that you're not moving as fast as, you know, whoever down the street that is doing 5 million TikToks a day. And, you know, but it does affect things, though. Social media does affect quite a lot. I'm thankful that Beachwood has a pretty steady Spotify listener base. Mm-hmm. That I think is where we thrive. That and YouTube, you know. But I don't know. I look at it like I do my thing, and it's a different thing than what they're doing. You know, whoever it is, whether it's the newer generation, and I applaud the newer generation for being able to be so creative so quickly, and being able to put things out so quickly, and they're not second guessing themselves, and whether that's good content they're putting out or not, I still I, you know, I'm like, no, go for it. Do your thing.
Yeah, they're expressing, it's different than what I do. Expressing their art, and yeah, go for it.
Yeah. I like to take that stance because I don't, I don't want to be this bitter old man. I was this punk rock elitist kid for a long time, mm-hmm. you know, and I've worked hard to like kind of get away from that mentality. I'm trying to stay away from that mentality of like hating everything that isn't like so genuine and true and cool and whatever. Like, I just applaud people for being creative. I think it helps all around, you know.
Definitely.
It brings a fan base to more music. I think people are going to shows a lot more now too.
Yeah.
Because the shows are getting crazy. Yeah. Which it's good. The live industry is alive. Yeah. You know, it's alive and well.
Which is a good thing because, you know, there were a couple mm-hmm. of years where, you know, things weren't looking too promising.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
So, Jason, thank you so much for coming on today's show. Where can people follow you, follow the band, and what's the website, and is there anything else you would like to promote?
The band is Beachwood Coyotes. Beachwoodcoyotes.com is our website. So on Instagram, my personal Instagram is Jason B Knott. So it's JasonBnott. I'll be doing, you know, releasing more solo music and eventually I'm going to put out a record by myself too, and Beachwood's going to be put out some music in the next few months as well. So yeah, social media, Beachwood Coyotes, Jason Knott. That's it across the board. I think it's everywhere you can find that.
Awesome. I'm definitely excited to hear the new music, and whether you know you guys are performing in California or LA or Boston, I'm definitely going to be at one of those shows.
Awesome. Yeah. And please, when you come out to LA, hit me up. Let's hang out.
Definitely will, man. Thank you so much, Jason. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Of course. Have a good day, man.
You too.
You are listening to On Air with JT.
This is On Air with JT. Join JT, visionary and host, for a 420 friendly improv and variety talk show featuring pop culture, news, interviews, debates, and the home of the famous JT Rants. Here, mental health awareness is at the forefront, with JT on a mission to inspire and spread mental health awareness. Available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and YouTube. You can stay up to date and get in touch by heading to onairwithjt.com. To contact the show directly or for business inquiries, use onairwithjt@gmail.com.
JT here. I have to introduce you to Pure Hemp Rolling Papers. Eco-friendly, tree-free, and chemical-free. Born in 1996 in Spain, with nearly 300 years of paper crafting experience, explore their variety of rolls and cones, including their innovative Pure Hemp Earth Papers. For quality and innovation in rolling, choose Pure Hemp. That's what I smoke. Visit their Instagram for more information and elevate your rolling game with Pure Hemp. That's PureHemp. Tell them JT sent you.
JT did it again.